This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today and Utopia News. We're about to speak to Congressman Charles Rangel, who's the U.S. Representative from the 15th Congressional District in New York State. Welcome to Utopia News.
Good to be with you.
Why do you want to reinstate the draft?
Because I believe whenever the nation is at war, that everyone should make some type of a sacrifice. This is the first war in our history that we're giving tax breaks to the rich and soliciting recruits from the areas of the highest unemployment. And it's been my experience in the last 5 years that most every person that supports the war do not support their children being involved in being in harm's way.
Do you think that makes it more likely that the people who support the war feel safe supporting it?
Well, I'd rather say that they would not be supporting the war if they thought that their children and grandchildren were going to fight it. And that is a fact.
So, in fact, is your effort to reinstate the draft an effort to stop the war?
Well, that would be a side effect. I do believe that with the terrorist threat and the needs of our hospitals and schools, that every young person should make some contribution in terms of a domestic contribution, and it should be mandatory. And, of course, a small part of that would be military obligation, of course.
Okay, but apart from these ancillary effects, what are the problems that the military is experiencing right now that make you say that it's necessary to reinstate the draft?
Well, first of all, we already got a backdoor draft, as you know, some 40,000 Army personnel as well as 2,500 Marines recently. They've already served their tour of duty, but because technically they made themselves available for additional duty even after they've rejoined their families, going back to work, going to school, and they're being called up, and the Secretary of Defense is saying that they're meeting their recruiting goals, but that is such an inequitable and unfair way to meet your goals with veterans, Marines, and soldiers that have been to Iraq once and twice and are really pushing their odds and going back again. In addition to that,
Is this essentially an internal draft, a draft for people, but only for those that have already signed up and served?
Yes, it's terrible. And they're just calling up 2,500 additional Marines last week. And these are veterans who've been there and made their sacrifices and seen their buddies die and maimed. And just because they're caught in a technical net, that it must be around 60,000 of soldiers that have been forced to come back against their will, really. And in addition to that, they're offering $40,000, upward to $40,000 to recruit kids from areas, rural areas, inner city areas, where they concentrate on where the kids don't have much opportunity for full-time employment.
To belabor the obvious, why are they offering so much money?
Because kids know that they could die, and it's very difficult for them to not offer anything and think kids are just going to go for the adventure. And it's very, very interesting that you've never heard the Commander-in-Chief making an appeal to Americans to join the military to defend their country. You know, when they're fighting, they lure them, and when they die, they lure them, and when they come home and get wounded. But they don't make an appeal to the general public because they don't want middle and upper middle class people to feel guilty and not volunteering. You know, know, in any war that we've had, public officials, everyone, should feel a sense that their country is endangered, and therefore they want to do something to make some sacrifice. But,
well, is there some kind of contradiction between those activities or lack of activities that you're talking about and the general rhetorical justification of the war in Iraq?
Well, they support the war as long as other people's kids are fighting it. What's the contradiction?
Yes, okay, because there's a...
What's the contradiction? They are not making an appeal to their constituents to join and fight this war.
Does this undermine the I don't know what kind of terms to use here, the moral credibility of the U.S. In the fight?
I don't know about in the fight, but it would seem to me that if they tell you that we're fighting terrorists, and really, most of the fight is with roadside bombs, but that's another issue. If they say we're fighting terrorists, why don't they ask all of Americans that can make a contribution to join in the fight against terrorists? Why don't they ask them to enlist? Why is it that they're pouring money into poor communities and getting kids that are disadvantaged to get them perked up to go?
What's your answer to those questions?
They would be discredited. I've talked with supporters of the war. They don't want their kids in danger. That's one of the reasons why, you know, they won't even give the talk of a draft a fair hearing, because they don't want to scare the hell out of people who support the war as long as other people's kids are fighting the war. It makes sense, and you can ask any of your friends at lunch or dinner at cocktail parties, and they would tell you that. They're giving kids an opportunity to get an education, if they live.
There's a lot of glib comment to say the Iranians or the Syrians are willing to fight for the are willing to fight to the last Lebanese for whatever they believe. Is there a sort of similar pattern here where you're saying that the people who are waging the war are willing to fight to the last person from a class or a group that they're not in for this war?
Well, there's a strange thing about the military. That for whatever reasons you enlist, even if they're economic reasons, there is a sense of camaraderie when you know there's a common enemy. And so therefore, I don't challenge the patriotism of those people that went in for economic reasons.
But I'm talking about the patriotism of the people who make the policies that bring them in to fight wars that they themselves are not willing to have their kind of people fight in.
I don't understand. You're dealing with terrorists and fanatics that really don't comply with any military experiences that we've ever had as a nation, and so they will be killing each other if we were not involved in this thing, and they kill each other, they kill us, and I have not heard anyone even make up any reason as to why we are there. I mean, we're there to fight terrorists, but who the hell are the terrorists? I mean, if the terrorists want to surrender, who would we be negotiating with? I mean, it's different with the Hezbollah. I mean, at least we know they have a leader. Who the hell's the leader we're fighting in Iraq?
Well,
these people are committed to their religious beliefs, and the only thing they agree on is that they hate Israel and the United States.
I was watching C-SPAN over the weekend, and Jonathan Schell was talking about what he thought. He wrote an article called Too Late for Empire that was in The Nation, and he was making the point on the program that rather than talk about a very broadly conceived war on terrorism, that it would be a better idea to essentially enumerate who the enemy is and try to focus the efforts to stop them rather than...
They don't know who the hell the enemy is. The enemy is not in uniform. The enemy doesn't come from a country. The enemy doesn't have a leader. As a matter of fact, tragically, our men and women are seeing their comrades killed by roadside bombs, and they don't see the enemy. And many of them, out of fear and frustration and pain, are killing people that are innocent who looks like who the enemy may be in their minds.
Who's responsible for this state of affairs?
Who's responsible for war? I mean,
no,
you can't have a clean-cut war.
Right. No, I mean...
Who's responsible for the hundreds of thousands of innocent people in the Middle East that are dying? They don't know Bush. They don't know and care about Israel. They don't know Saddam Hussein. And they're being bombed and killed. How can you say who's responsible unless you want me to say it's those who caused the war? I mean, we were not attacked by Iraq. The president said last week, there's no connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11.
Well,
he could have said, of course, there are no weapons of mass destruction. So, of course, there's no connection with Al-Qaeda. Of course, Saddam Hussein was not a direct threat to the United States of America. But, so, you're asking me who's responsible? I guess all of those who support this war are responsible.
Okay.
The ministers are responsible. The rabbis, the priests, the omans, they're responsible. Everybody that's quiet about this. It's a massacre that's taken place.
All right.
They're responsible for it. The same people that were responsible for the silence of the Holocaust and of blacks being killed and lynched in the 20s and 30s, they're responsible for it. It's not Bush.
What's your view on whether the Democrats can retake the at least the House in the fall, and what effect that would have?
Under this form of government, you can only get to the president once every 4 years. But during the midterm election, you can send a message to the president by voting against anybody that supports a president's ideas that you disagree with. So whether it's Clinton in the midterm or Nixon in the midterm, I truly believe that Americans are fed up with the war, with the casualties, with the corruption, with the deficit, with the incompetence of President Bush. And since he's got another 2 years, people have to watch what happened to Lieberman, and it's going to happen to Republicans all over the country.
And if the Democrats take over the House, do you think that they would initiate efforts to stop the funding for the war?
First of all, if the Democrats win, it is my sincere hope that America and we in the House and hopefully in the Senate can take a deep breath and try to bring a sense of civility and not hostility and not a get-even atmosphere. I really think that those who drafted the Constitution, even though it's a check and balance, did not want to see a free-for-all and a fight among the different branches. And so we should be able to talk with our Republican friends, and through admissions by the administration, prove that our troops serve no purpose in a civil war, that we cannot identify the enemy. The president can talk about a victory, but he cannot describe victory in a way that people would understand it. And to say that as long as he's president, we're going to be there, makes no sense at all. And so therefore, it is hopeful that if the House follows the findings of the bipartisan 9/11 Commission, and are able just to hold hearings, not Democratic hearings, but hearings for the House, that it would be proven to them that we're not serving our country's national interests by spending $5 billion a month and losing thousands of Americans and tens of thousands wounded and hundreds of thousands of people dying. That it doesn't make any sense. And the only way we can do this is by having hearings and having people under oath to testify, not who is the commander-in-chief who could violate the laws, but what is the goal, what is the objective? And I go around the country asking this. I ask ministers, what is the objective? Are these people human beings that God created? I mean, aren't they entitled to more respect than just being labeled collateral damage? I mean, I've been in war. I've been shot. I've seen death. And hell, I think it's wrong to beat a damn dog in the street to death. Can't we have more respect for the people that are going to die with a war that no one can say we can win?
So
what's the victory?
So you're saying that a Democratic takeover of the House would lead to a situation where you'd be able to reason with the everyone there and come up with a plan to do what exactly?
I don't know to do what exactly, but the end is to get the hell out of Iraq exactly. How you do it, where you do it, is going to have to be a face-saving thing. But let me tell you one thing, that no matter how sincere members of Congress are, when they feel the wrath of these damn fickle voters on their backs, somehow they manage to adjust their feelings. You know, I suspect that we have a responsibility to vote our conscience as well as to listen to the voters. But listen to the voters we will and we must. And so, if the Democrats take over the House, it's a sea change message to the members of the House, Republican and Democrats. And they have to decide whether or not they're going to walk in lockstep with the president and be vulnerable to their voters or to adjust their thinking on the war.
Do you think, from what you just said, that you're proposing something essentially Senator Aiken proposed for Vietnam, declare victory and leave?
No. That is so hypocritical. First of all, if you were to declare the victory, you couldn't even describe the damn victory.
Right.
You couldn't do it. We have to give up this idea of victory.
Well, the president seems pretty committed to it.
Well, I bet you if your life depended on it, you couldn't give a scenario as to what would be an acceptable victory for the president. You have no clue what this man's talking about.
Well,
I challenge you just to make up something. The terrorists are going to surrender. Who the hell would be the terrorists? I mean, somebody's going to agree not to have the bombs, not to kill each other. What the hell is the victory? And so if someone was to declare victory, even those against the war would be compelled to say, what did we win?
Okay. I want to talk about one other short thing and then some more about the draft, your draft proposal. Would you also favor, as a way of sharing sacrifice, rescinding the some or all of the tax cuts that President Bush has put in for upper-income people?
What does that get to do with the sacrifice? No, I think we would have to review our tax policies and have to take a look at the deficit and that's a part of the war with me. The loss of life and limb is more important than the money we're spending, but
okay.
That's a big problem. And when the interest that we're paying on the debt is larger than the domestic discretionary programs, the only thing you can do is cut out the programs or raise the revenue. Now, that's a decision that you just don't walk into blindly and say you're going to raise taxes, but you damn sure have to review it. And that has been a decision that Republicans have made. Cut the programs and cut the taxes and conduct the war. That is wrong.
Is this kind of a weird transformation of what got Lyndon Johnson into trouble when he tried to spend for domestic programs and the war at the same time and caused an inflation that took 10 years to work itself out of the system?
Well, we don't have that problem because they're cutting the program and they're borrowing the money.
Right, okay.
And we can continue to borrow the money. Somebody else has got to pay it back. It's totally inconceivable that conservatives become the world leader and even chastise people for unfair trade practices when we owe them trillions of dollars. I don't see how we can't enforce it militarily, and we can't enforce it morally, we can't enforce it economically, and so we got to stop the hemorrhage. And hey, it's either cutting programs and or raising taxes.
Okay, I'd like to talk some more about the specifics of your draft bill. Who would be eligible under this legislation to be
everybody
drafted?
Actually, I changed it to 39 because the administration has changed those who can enlist from 18 to 26. They kicked the top off, so I kicked it off too.
Okay,
and all men, women, no deferments except if you're 18 and you haven't finished high school, you got another year to finish it, then you're eligible too. Everybody.
And
no deferment.
How long would people have to sign up? And is there much of the selective service system in place still, or would it be necessary to get a new?
They are, surprisingly. They are really recruiting, even as we talk, volunteers for the Selective Service Board.
So that's in place, or
yes. Right now, as you and I talk, they are encouraging community people to volunteer to serve on these boards.
And those boards have legal standing already?
Yes.
Okay. And what would be the terms of who would be called up? Would there be a lottery to decide who went or what?
We would have to
do
that because those eligibles, only a fraction of those eligible would have to serve in the military, but the rest of them would be available to serve.
After the original, you're saying everyone in the country between the ages of 18 and 39, is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Men, women?
Yes.
Do you have some figures on how many people that is and how many?
I have
what
all
proportion,
of that. What Emil
proportion?
In my office has.
Okay.
It's when you take the cap off, it's much larger than it was when 26 was the cap.
Right.
But even then, it's only a small fraction. But if you think about all of the things that young people can do during this period of terrorism in our subways, our railroads, our airports, our seaports, and in addition to that, having trained people in our nursing homes and housing developments and hospitals, you know, if you take a look at Katrina, instead of calling back National Guard from Iraq, wouldn't it be wonderful if young people were there in uniform to say, hey, I'm here to help you? And believe me, so many Republicans agree with me, but they think, and they may have some truth to it, that this is really an affront to the president and his policies. But I think beyond that, we can use the brains and the eyes and the ears of our young people and to have them to develop a sense of patriotism, which we don't have in this country. This war has not generated the enthusiastic support to protect our flag and country.
Where is the president on your legislation?
Well, I guess he's with Rumsfeld, who opposes it.
And what grounds do they put forward as a reason for opposing it, if they put
forward
reasons?
Well, Rumsfeld had to apologize when he said that draftees were not as professional as volunteers, and of course that was a slap in the face to the great generation that saved the world from fascism. So he hurriedly, you know, none of these guys have ever served, and they don't have a sense of patriotism as relates to personal service in the military, but they would say that that the volunteers are just so happy to fight the wars that why change it with people who are disgruntled? Then they said that if you had a draft, by the time you train the person, they would be eligible for discharge, and so it would be a waste of money unless they were motivated by career. But the truth is that they have reduced now the time to volunteer to 18 months, and so mine is 2 years, so they contradict themselves. But they don't say it, but it it's all three things: politics, politics, politics. If they thought that that they would not have to pay a political price for a draft, you know, they're drafting Marines and service people that already have fulfilled their military obligation. That's a draft.
Now, you said that a lot of the people who are drafted could be used for essentially domestic purposes.
Yes.
How large a contingent would you like to see that be?
I think that's to be determined, but we have a lot of people. You know, I don't want to be critical of the people that we've hired at the airports, but a lot could be said about their training or lack of it, and certainly the incidents in London is evidence that they could be better trained in terms of what to look for. And if I think I would feel, I don't feel any more secure now than I did before 9/11. But if I saw these young people, polite people, trained people around, I'd feel I have a lot more secure in public areas.
How long would the draft stay in place under your legislation?
Well, as long as we under threat of terrorism, as far as the kids are concerned, as far as the young people are concerned. And let me add this too. I believe, and many share my belief, that one of the most serious setbacks that we're having in the United States of America today is a lack of education and a lack of research and development. And as we move forward in globalization, one of the reasons why we have such a deficit in offshore jobs that are being created is because we find developing countries like China and India, and of course the entire European Union, excelling in the ability of people to be trained in advanced technology, and we are not keeping our competitive edge. As a matter of fact, among the younger people, especially in the poorer communities, we are investing more in the criminal justice system, if you want to call it justice, as it relates to police and judges and district attorneys and jails and prisons. And it would seem to me that one, and I remember this so well because I was one of the bums that enlisted to avoid getting into trouble, one, you avoid that by training a kid to have some degree of self-esteem, and you have no idea what a uniform can do for a young person in terms of feeling like there's somebody. Second, not only do you train them, but they will be eligible for education benefits. There's no reason why any kid with any potential, not necessary to become brain surgeons, but to be able to make a better contribution by having training after the service. And God knows the GI Bill was responsible for turning this country around, and that goes unchallenged. And so we have so many kids even today that are working and trying to get married and have kids and paying off college loans, my kids being a part of that. So this would help us in terms of having a more competitive workforce in terms of education. And what does education do? I can stretch this to say it can prevent a Katrina.
Are you saying that apart from the military aspects of this, that reinstating the draft would help the U.S. compete with Europe and Asia in terms of educating young people?
Exactly. I mean after they get discharged.
Right.
Yes, sure. I think the same way Kennedy was able to get an increase in math and science by going to the moon, that we can do it by having an increase in the education of our workforce. And a better workforce, of course, assists us in international trade. And it would help us in terms of anti-terrorism. If you take a look at Katrina, and which was a natural disaster, and picture something similar that would be a terrorist attack. How educated people, people who have training, are able to be of assistance to other people. Poverty gives access to jobs, to health care, to decent housing. I think it'd be a shot in the arm for the economy, and it would be a patriotic thing to do. When people, no matter how much service people bitch and complain, when they get out, they're proud of the fact that they've served. It's totally unbelievable.
Speaking of complaining, have you any anecdotal or survey evidence about how popular this is likely to be among young people, and whether some of them might start organizing against it?
I've talked at Brown University, Columbia, New York University, City College, and I think the kids really believe that that it's an anti-war measure and that it's not going anywhere.
Right.
But I've never... You know, one Korean kid said his mother left Korea to avoid having to be involved with the military, and now that he's an American citizen, am I really going back to having a military government? And I said, young man, you wouldn't be here unless people like me, you know, save South Korea from the communists, you know, so don't knock militarism when you are the beneficiary of it, you know, but, and there are some anti-war people, but most people truly believe, as I, that if we did have a draft, we wouldn't be in Iraq, and that's the bottom line.
Okay, what's the bill number of this bill?
I don't know, but I'll have Emil to call you.
Okay, and where is
why don't you call Emil, 202?
Don't give it out over the air. That's just as well. I'll call. I can call back. Where is the bill in the process now?
You know, the way we are in the Congress, if you are in the minority, there is no process for a Democratic bill.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, there's hardly a process for a Republican bill unless the leadership has selected it
right.
as one to get support. So, while it's in committee, what they did do last year is to bring the bill out on the suspension calendar without hearings,
right.
Knowing that it would be defeated because no one knew what the bill was and what it would cost, and they brought it out as a non-controversial bill. So, I was able to get most all of the Democrats to vote against it. Against the process,
right.
because they had not brought it up in the regular order, and we never had. They would not even give us time to debate the bill. They could not even debate the bill themselves because you can only bring a bill out if you support it and was going to vote for the bill. They brought the bill up saying that they were against the bill. So
when you say that, where it is in the process is waiting for the Democrats to get control of the House is where it is in the process.
Well, actually, the way the Constitution provides for the House is that all bills die every 2 years.
Okay.
So at the, in the next couple of weeks when the Congress adjourns, it would have to be reintroduced, which I intend to do. It would be reintroduced in the new Congress.
And what's the likelihood you think that, given a Democratic House in 2007, that it would pass substantially in its current form?
Well, not very likely. My bill gets new life every time the recruiting goes down and they have to get another $10,000 or $20,000 and put up in order to give bonuses. Or when you see what is happening today, when they call up 2,500 Marines to join the other 60,000 who's already fulfilled their commitment to the military many times in Iraq, then people say that we cannot intimidate Iran, Syria, North Korea in talking about the military option being on the table, and we don't have any military. And so, if we're going to expand our military presence all over the world with this foreign policy that we have, it is impossible to do that when we can't even fulfill Rumsfeld's commitment in Iraq with the troops that we have.
I'm trying to understand whether there's a contradiction in your own position here. Are you in favor of expanding U.S. military operations around the world?
No, but I don't see any contradiction. I'm saying that if we say that Iran should not have nuclear capabilities and that the military option's on the table, everybody in the administration is saying that, then we can't get enough people to fulfill our Rumsfeld commitment in Iraq. Please share with me where the contradiction is.
Well, because it doesn't sound like you're in favor of expanded U.S. military activity, but you're saying...
No, but I'm American. I'm a member of Congress.
Right.
If that's the policy, what am I going to do? I mean, it's my kids, my constituents are doing the service. I have to be concerned.
So you're saying...
I don't have any... I'm not saying that we should... I've been to war with North Korea. I don't want any part of that.
Right.
And then another thing, too, is that why do we have to use just our kids? Where are all of these friends of the president that go in and out of the Crawford Ranch? What about the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia? What about the president of Egypt? What about the king of Jordan? Don't they have kids? Don't they have military? I mean, is this not a dispute that's in their region of the world? Why do we have American kids over there refereeing a fight? And you've never heard of any of the Arab nations getting involved in this thing. And it's their region. I mean, the fact that they still hate Israel, hate the United States, we give them billions of dollars in every year. We give them preferential treatment and trade. And they're not involved in this fight, and this is their fight, not ours.
So you'd like to see, if not a draft, at least some action taken by the Egyptian, Saudi, and Jordanian governments to put some of their troops into Iraq. Is that what you're saying?
You bet your sweet life. I mean... Are they not a part of the willing coalition? You know, I know that we have an interest in their oil, but isn't it true that while they're not fighting Israel, they're still teaching the kids the poison against Israel? And do you think they love the United States of America? Aren't they still burning American flags in these countries?
Didn't the Shiites who are constituting the majority of the Iraqi government support Hezbollah?
Well, we don't want them to... Well, we don't know who's supporting them. We heard some criticism from some of the Arab nations, but they didn't volunteer to provide a buffer for Israel and Lebanon.
Right, no, I'm talking about the government that's been instituted under the U.S. occupation of Iraq that supports Hezbollah.
Well, that's all the more reason why Arabs should be involved.
All right. I want to thank you very much for talking to us today on Utopia News, and I hope that if the Democrats take over the House next year, we can later this year, and are in place next year, we can talk again and see where things stand on this issue.
Well, I do hope that Americans take advantage of this opportunity, not only to vote for members of the House and Senate, but to consider the policies of the president. And they have an opportunity to support or defeat those people who, in their opinion, are not doing what they were voted to do. So this is a great opportunity for Americans to really express themselves on domestic and foreign policy. And when you think of the people that died for the right to vote, one day someone may say, when all of this was going on, did you do anything to stop it? Did you vote? Did you register? Did you bring out people? And I hope that all of us, no matter how we vote, can say, yes, I participated. That's why our men and women fought in wars before, to give us this valuable right, and it shouldn't just be taken for granted. It should be used.
You're going to be there to lead this effort then. How's your own election coming there in the 15th District?
Well, I don't have an opponent in my district. As a matter of fact, I very seldom do have an opponent, but I do go around the country trying to encourage people to become citizens when it's possible, to register, and to participate. I don't even have to say vote Democratic, because if people are happy with what is happening in the world under the leadership of George Bush, then it would be such a tremendous disappointment to me as an American, and I don't think that's going to happen. As a matter of fact, I see a lot of good Republicans a sea change in the Congress as Americans express themselves with lack of satisfaction, which all the polls indicate with the president.
Is the junior senator from your state, Senator Clinton, on board with your proposal about the draft? And how do your positions on the war differ, or are they the same?
I have no clue as to what the junior senator's position is on the war. I've listened very carefully to her, and she's almost in the same position as I am without having an opponent, and so I don't really know. The closest thing to a public expression is her support for Lamont, who defeated Senator Lieberman, and she is supporting Lamont, so I assume she's supporting his opposition to the war, the way the war is being conducted. But both of my senators, you may recall, Schumer and Hillary Clinton, supported the war, which, quite frankly, I can understand a lot of people supporting the war based on the false information that was given to them by the president. I just don't understand when it's proven that none of the evidence had a scintilla of truth to it, why they would continue to support the war.
Having said that, does that mean that you think the president ought to be impeached by the House for lying to the people and the Congress about the reasons for going to war?
No, I've sat on the impeachment committee with Nixon, and a lot of people think that impeachment really means running someone out of office. Impeachment means an inquiry as to whether or not the conduct of the president violated his constitutional oath of office, and whether or not charges should be brought, which would be then tried in the Senate.
Right.
So I think that is abundantly clear that none of the information that the president gave to the country and to the Congress was valid. Now comes the question, as did the president know at the time he was given this that it was bad information and the intelligence wasn't accurate? Now, there are some people, many of whom have written books, indicating that when 9/11 occurred, the information was that it was Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, and that's where the intelligence was going in terms of supplying it to President Bush.
Well, in fact, that's what provided the rationale for the invasion of Afghanistan.
Yes, but throughout all of this, it seems as though the people who've written these books have indicated that the president was not interested in going after Osama bin Laden, but wanted information to prove that the terrorists, that we had to knock off Saddam Hussein in Iraq. Now, we've had authors and officials formerly with the administration infer that there's reason to believe that they wanted, long before 9/11, that the president had made up his mind that he was going to invade Iraq, separate and apart from 9/11. Now, there's no evidence in the Congress to prove that. So you don't say you're looking for to impeach the president, but it would be ridiculous if we did not provide oversight so that we can prevent these type of mistakes from happening. Even if you believe that the president was justified in believing the false information that was given to him.
So you're saying what the Democrats are committed to is stronger oversight?
Don't say stronger, just oversight. There has been no oversight by the Republicans in the House or in the Senate. And we have not fulfilled our constitutional responsibility. We haven't had any oversight. And for those people who believe that having oversight means that you're seeking to impeach the president, means you don't have confidence in the president's veracity.
All right. Well, we're going to see what happens, and I want to thank you very much for talking to us about your views today on Utopian News.
Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Should I get a copy of this?
You'll get a link to it.
Okay, that's... That's great.
Be radio. It should be up pretty soon.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Terrific.
Bye.